We're gonna start. We're gonna start by the two dots on the bottom of Ayin Tesa Amid Beis, the last three words.
Okay.
Okay. So just to kind of recap, for those of you who have been following the last couple of weeks, basically, as we've seen, the last few prakim have all been about how much of a certain item do I need to carry in order to be chayav, as we've already seen. Also, if everyone could just mute themselves, if you're not already muted. Okay, so the Mishnah continues with this theme, right? The Mishnah says, Dio kidei lichto, when it comes to ink, so the amount of ink that you need to carry on Shabbos to be chayav is enough to write two letters. So the Gemara explains, Tana, shtei osios bidio, shtei osios bekumos, shtei osios bekalmerin. The Gemara says, it really makes no difference how exactly you carry out these two letters, whether it's dried ink, whether it's ink in a quill, whether it's ink inside of the inkwell. In other words, it doesn't matter exactly how those letters, how that ink is carried out. It's always going to be a violation of carrying if you carry out in other words, enough ink to write two letters, whether, again, it's dry in the inkwell or in the quill. So the Gemara raises the question, by Rava, os achas bidio, os achas bekumos, os achas bekamerin mahu, teku. So the Gemara leaves as an unresolved question, what if you had enough ink, in other words, enough dried ink for one letter combined with enough ink in the inkwell for one letter, or enough ink in the inkwell and enough ink in the quill for one letter. So the Gemara leaves that as an unresolved suffix. Okay. Amar Rava, hotzi shtei osios uchsavan kishuhu mahalich chayav, ksivasan zoi hanachasan. Comes Rava and says, let's say I carried out enough ink to write two letters, and not only that, but I was writing the two letters as I was walking. So the Gemara says that's an Isra D'Oraisa. I'm chayav for that. Why? Because the act of writing is considered like the Hanacha. Now, the Gemara here, it's important to point out, is not addressing the Isra of writing on Shabbos. That's a separate issue. That's not what we're focusing on here, even though you will violate that as well. The Gemara is instead focusing on the Isra of Hotza'a, of carrying. And we know from basically the first daf in Masechah Shabbos that in order to violate Hotza'a on Shabbos, Mida Oraisa, you need what's called an Akira and a Hanacha. You have to pick something up and put something down in the same rishus. So the Gemara is trying to figure out how, in a case, if I carried out ink, enough ink to write two letters, and now I'm writing, I'm scribbling something on a piece of paper, the Gemara says that very act of writing itself is the halachic equivalent of a hanacha, of placing it down, and therefore I'm going to be chayav for carrying on Shabbos. Okay. V'amar Rava, hotzi osachas uchsava, v'chazar v'hotzi osachas uchsava pater. Let's say a person only carried out enough ink to write one letter. He then wrote the one letter, then went back into the house, got another amount of ink to write one letter, and wrote that letter. Then he is going to be putter for carrying on Shabbos. My taima, be'inna da'afka levasraisa, chaser le'lishi'ura de'kamaisa. Because at the time that he was carrying out the second half of the ink, he was lacking from the first half. In other words, he didn't carry out the requisite shear either time that he was carrying, right? And since you have to carry out the full amount, in other words, enough ink to write two letters all at one time, if you carry them out in two separate, you know, instances, so then you're not going to be chayav for carrying on Shabbos. Well, maybe that's a separate question. Again, the Gemara is not addressing the issue about writing. That may or may not be the case. Also, maybe if you write two letters, meaning because we know that in order to be chayav on Shabbos, you have to write two letters. You have to write two letters in order to be chayav on Shabbos. The question is, what if I write one letter 5 minutes into Shabbos and the other letter 5 minutes before Shabbos is over? Is that called writing two letters on Shabbos? So that's not an issue the Gemara is addressing here. The simple answer probably is that you'll be putter there also, because you probably have to do, it has to be one act of writing. It has to be one, you know, one continuous act of writing two letters. Okay. V'amar Rava, hotzi chatzi grogeras achas vihinicha, v'chazar v'hotzi chatzi grogeras achas vihinicha, rishona nasa kimisha kolt tekelev osha nisrifa upater. The Gemara has kind of a similar case. Let's say I carried out a half a grogeras, a half a fig's worth of food, which we know this year for carrying food on Shabbos is a grogeras, is a fig's worth. So I carry half a fig's worth of food, and then I leave it on the ground. Then I go back into the house, and I get another half a fig's worth of food, and then I carry it also. So the Gemara says that we view the first half of food, the first half a grogeras worth of food that you carried, as if it was swallowed up or eaten by the dog or burned up by the fire, meaning to say that first half basically doesn't exist anymore, essentially, and therefore you are going to be putter when you carry out the second half. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Va'amai ha-mancha. Why would I be putter in this case? If I place the first half of a grogeras of food on the ground, and I bring my second half and place it down next to it, so then I just did a hanacha. In other words, who cares that I didn't do the hanacha, you know, within a second of each other? I still did a hanacha. I should still be chayav for that. So the Gemara says, no. Hachi ka'amar. Ve'im kadam behigbiya rishona kodem hanacha shnia, nasis rishona kemisha niklata o shenishrafo pata. The Gemara says, you're right. You're only going to be putter in a case where before you brought out the second half of grogeres of food, you picked up the first half that you just put on the ground and then removed it or got rid of it. And then if you bring out that second half later on, then you would be putter. But in a hanami, if I left the first half of grogeres of food on the ground, then I got another half of grogeres and brought it out and put it on the ground also, then in fact I would be chayav according to this gemara. Okay.
Doesn't your example hold again as to the question of the timing, like 5 minutes?
Right. So this, again, it's not very clear from any of these cases in the Gemara exactly what the timing is. The Gemara never says, was there a 30-second gap? Was there a five-hour gap? Right. It's not very clear in any of these cases, right? But, again, as we'll see, just to give a little bit of context, in the case of the ink that we mentioned before with the writing, the ink has the potential to dry up, right? So it could be that, you know, you're going to be lacking in the shear. So if I carried out, let's say only one letter's worth of ink, so that if I bring out another one letter's worth of ink 3 hours later, it's very possible that the first ink that I carried out is already dried up, which means that maybe the shear of the ink is going to be less than it was before. The assumption here by the food, at least, again, assuming that no one or nothing was grabbing the food that was on the floor, that the food is going to stay the same. So the Gemara says the only time that I'm going to be putter in the case of the food is if I actually picked up the first half off the ground before I brought out the second half of grogeres. Okay. The Amar Rava, again, another similar case. Hotzi chatzi grogeres v'hinicha v'chazer v'hotzi chatzi grogeres v'evira derech alehachayv. So this case is slightly different here. I carried out the first half of grogeres and put it on the ground, just like in the previous case. But with the second half of grogeres, what I did was, instead of placing it down next to the first half, I simply passed it over on top of the first half that was already on the ground. So the Gemara says, in that case, you're going to be chayav. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, v'amai? Halo nach, but there's no hanacha. If I'm still holding on to the second half of grogeres of food, it never reached the ground. So then why would I be chayav for that? So the Gemara says, yeah, kigon shavira toch shlosha. The case is where I brought my hand to within three tfachim, and we know the famous principle of lavud, right, in many other areas of halacha, by iruv, by sukkah. So the Gemara is essentially invoking the principle of lavud, that if your hand is within three tfachim of the food that's already on the ground, then it's halachically viewed as if it was also placed on the ground. So the Gemara says, but that still doesn't explain anything. The Ha'amar Rava, to shlosha l'rabbanan, sarech hanacha al gabi mashu. Rava, this is a statement that we had all the way back, that we touched on a little bit earlier, and we'll see a little bit also later on in the 11th parak, which is that if you want to invoke the principle of lavud, that your hand is within three tfachim of something, in order for that to be effective, in order for the principle of lavud to be invoked, in this case it would actually be a chumrah to invoke lavud, it needs to rest on something. We actually spoke about this in the beginning of the Masechta, that according to many opinions in the Gemara, if I'm going to be placing something, or if I'm going to be doing an act of an akira and hanacha, it needs to reside on an item. You can't just have it like floating in the air, right? So lavud, even though, yes, halachically speaking, lavud, when it's within three tefachim, it's considered on the ground, but it's not physically resting on top of anything. It's just in my hand. So the question is, how do we view this as if the second half of grogeres of food is connected to the first half, if it's not physically resting on anything? So the Gemara says, no, lokashia, kan bezori, kan bemavir, it depends. If I'm throwing the second half of grogeres of food and it flies over the first half, then it does not require to actually reside on top of something, then I'm going to be chayev. But if I'm simply passing it over in my hand, so then I'm not going to be chayev, because again, the half of grogeres needs to sit on top of something in order for a hanacha to actually be effectuated. If there is no hanacha, so then I'm going to be putter. Okay, the Gemara now says, Tana Rabbanan.
Why would there be a distinction between throwing?
Between throwing and placing, because the assumption, okay, good question, because again, this is really a discussion for a little bit later on in the 11th parak. This is part of a complicated machlokas. That's what we call kluta kemi shehuncha or kluta lav kemi shehuncha. There's a whole machlokas later in the Gemara about when something is in the air, do we view that as if it's already resided on the ground or not? It's a very, very technical machlokas, which we'll talk about a little bit later. That's kind of what's at play here, about when something is traveling in the air. Again, when it's in my hand, it's not traveling anywhere. It's still in my hand. When it's flying in the air, so that's going to be subject to this machlokas about whether we view it as if it's on the ground or not. Okay.
But if it's in the air, does it have to be within the three tfachim?
It still has to be within the three tfachim in order for you to be chayav. Correct. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hotzi chatzi grogeres v'chazer v'hotzi chatzi grogeres behele mechad chayav b'shtei halamos pater. So according to the Tana Kama, he says, if I carry out two half of grogereses of food, right, so I'm only going to be chayav if I do that in one lapse of awareness. So in one, you know, period of me forgetting that today is Shabbos, or me forgetting that carrying on Shabbos is usher, whatever the case is. So if I carry out my two half of grogereses in that one lapse of awareness, then I'm chayav. But if it was in multiple lapses of awareness, then I'm going to be pater. Rabbi Yossi Omer behele mechad Rishus Echad Chayav L'shtei Rishuyos Pater. And Rabbi Yossi is even more lenient. Rabbi Yossi says that just because I'm doing it in one lapse of awareness, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm Chayav. I would only be Chayav in one lapse of awareness if I also carried the two half of Grogerises into two different Rishuyos. In other words, if I were, let's say, carried the first half into a Rishus Hayachid and the second half into a Rishus Harabim, but if I carried both into the same Rishus, then I'm going to be Pater, even in a case of one lapse of awareness. And then Amar Rabba, Rabba further qualifies the statement, Rabba says that the assumption is of me being of chayiv when I carry it into two different rishuyos when one lapse of awareness. The assumption is that there is a rishus in the middle that would create an isur d'oraisa. So we know, for example, if I, let's say I carry something from a rishus harabim, from one half of a rishus harabim to another half of a rishus harabim, and there's a rishus hayachid in the middle, that would be an isur d'oraisa to walk from one half to the other when I cross through a rishus hayachid. But let's say the interposing area is only a karmelis, so we know that a karmelis is only a rishus midrabanan, right? So if I were to walk, let's say, from a rishus harabim into a karmelis on Shabbos with carrying something, that would only be an Isser Durabanan. So according to Rabba, I would not be Chayiv a Karban in that case. So for example, if let's say in one lapse of awareness, I carried one half a Grogeris of food into a Rishus Harabim and another half a Grogeris into a Karmelis, Rabba would say that I'm not Chayiv a Chatas there. Because according to Rabba, the only way to be Chayiv a Chatas when you carry two halves of a Grogeris in one lapse of awareness into two different Rishuyos is assuming that the two different Rishuyos are D'Oraisa, meaning like a Rishus Harabim and a Rishus Hayachid. But if one of them is only Durabanan, like a Karmelis, then you're not going to be Chayiv. And then Abai even further qualifies this. He says, no, afilu karmelis, avol pislalo. Abai says, no, even if I carry it into a karmelis, I would still be chayav achatas for that. The only time that I would not be chayav achatas, says Abai, is by a pisla. A pisla is basically like this thick beam of wood that you have in like the middle of the street, or like interposing in the middle of the street. So according to Abai, if I were to carry an item, let's say half a grogeris on one half of the beam of wood, and the other half on the other half of the beam of wood, then he says I'm not going to be chayav achatas. And then if Rava Amarva says, no, afilu pisla. Rava says, even if I carry two halves of a grogeris of food in one lapse of awareness into two halves of a rishus harabim that are separated by just a beam of wood, that's it, Rava says, I'm still chayav achatos. What's the basis for that statement of Rava? So the Gemara says, because Rava equates the laws of Shabbos when it comes to carrying to the laws of gittin. We know that if a husband wants to give a get to his wife, the get has to be in her rishus. It has to be inside of her rishus. Now, how exactly do we define a rishus? So in this particular example, the Gemara says in Maseches Gittin that if let's say a husband owns, let's say the husband and the wife have this rishus, and there's this beam of wood separating between the two of them, as long as the get makes it over the beam of wood, that's considered to be in the woman's rishus. So therefore, just as in the case of Gittin, for the purposes of a get, the get is considered to be in the woman's rishus once it reaches over that beam of wood, so too for the purposes of carrying on Shabbos, we view that as an independent rishus, and therefore Rava holds that you would in fact be chayav achatas in that scenario. Okay. So fine. So then the next case of the Mishnah we said was kol kedei likol ayin achas. When it comes to carrying things like eyeliner, foundation, that kind of thing. So the Mishnah says you're chayav when you carry out enough to paint over or to color over one eye. So the Gemara asks, ayin achas halo kachli. What kind of woman only puts eyeshadow or eyeliner on one of their eyes? It's like a very odd thing to do. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Ravuna, Shekit Snuos Kochos Ayin Achas. Apparently, the women who were more modest, they thought it was considered to be, I don't know, some kind of a breach of modesty to put eyeshadow or eyeliner on both of their eyes, so therefore they would only put it on one of their eyes. So it wasn't so crazy, apparently, to do that. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, Meisvei, Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Chol Im L'Rafua Kedei L'Chol Ayin Achas, Im L'Kashi B'Vezei Naim. The Brisa says that the only time people ever put eyeliner or eyeshadow or whatever on one eye was only for medicinal reasons, implying that if they were putting it on for ornamental reasons to make themselves look nice, they would always put it on two eyes, even if they were tsanua. So how can the Gemara arbitrarily distinguish between women who are modest and not, right? It sounds like the only point of distinction here is whether you're doing it for refuah or not. So the Gemara says, no, Tirgama Hillel Bereder, Shimon Bar Nachmini, Kitania Hibi Ranios, that Braisa that says that women for ornamental reasons would put the eyeshadow on both eyes, that was talking about girls who lived in the city. So apparently those girls were not as modest as the other girls. So therefore the Gemara says, yeah, for those people, they would put it on two eyes. But in a Hanami, if you're more modest, then you'd only put it on one eye. Okay, so skipping the parentheses now. So the Mishnah said, "Devik kedelitin barosh hashifshef." When it comes to carrying out glue on Shabbos, you're chayv when you carry out enough glue to put on top of a board. And the Gemara is going to explain what this board is right now. Tana kedelitin barosh shifshef shebarosh kanesh al tzayadin. So the hunters, the trappers, the people who used to trap and hunt birds, they used to put on top of their like spear, whatever it was they were using to hunt. They put this like board, and they would put a lot of glue on the board in order that the bird should get stuck on the board. So again, however much glue you would need to keep the bird stuck on the board, that's how much you would have to carry out on Shabbos in order to be chayv. Okay. Then we said zephis v'gufris kedei lasos, when it comes to carrying out things like tar, pitch, sulfur, that kind of thing. So we said in the Mishnah that the shear for which you are chayv is in order to make this this hole, to plug up a hole. So the Gemara says tana kedei lasos nekev katan. It's the shear, it's the amount that you would need, again, to make this small hole. If you have, let's say, a larger hole and you want to plug it up and make the hole smaller, however much sulfur or pitch or tar you need for that, that's the shear for which you would be chayav. And then we said, charisis kedei lasos pikor. We said that the shear for carrying out broken shards of earthenware is enough to make the opening to a bellows that goes into like a crucible that the goldsmiths, like the gold refiners, used to use. They would use this like bellows in order to produce the gold. So they used to put this little amount of like earthenware on top of the bellows that they would use by the crucible. So again, that was according to the Tanakhama, but Rabbi Yehuda actually disagreed, and Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that the shear for carrying out earthenware is enough to make like this tripod that you place outside of the gold refiner's oven, which seems to be a larger shear than the shear of the Tanakhama, which prompts the Gemara's question, which is Lememra de Shiura de Rabbi Yehuda Nafish, Hakaimelan de Shiura de Rabbana Nafish. Disnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kede Litol Himenu Midas Mino Lakatan. This is a theme, this is a question the Gemara is going to ask multiple times in the next couple of Dafim, about maybe, I think, like three or four times, which basically is that in the earlier Mishnah we had in the Perek, the Mishnah was talking about a very specific machlokas, again, between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, regarding the size of a reed. How many reeds, or how big does a reed have to be in order for you to be chayev? So according to the Chachamim, it has to be enough for you to be able to use it as a quill, to write as a quill. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, no, you're only chayev if you carry out a reed that's large enough to measure the shoe size of a young person, of a kid, which apparently is a smaller shear than the size of a quill. So based on that machlokes, the Gemara is convinced that Rabbi Yehuda always has the smaller shear than that of the Chachamim, because in that Mishnah, it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda's shear is smaller. So every time the Mishnah seems to imply that Rabbi Yehuda has a larger shear, the Gemara is going to jump on that and say, how could that possibly be if the Mishnah earlier says that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the shear is smaller? So the Gemara seems to be assuming within the Mishnah that every single time we have a machlokas in this realm of how much of an item do I need to carry to be chayav, that Rabbi Yehuda always has to be the smaller shear, which is why when it seems that he's the larger shear, the Gemara gets all flustered about that. So the Gemara says, so how in fact do we explain this? So the Gemara says, "Ema kedei lasod pit burkira ketan." The Gemara says, "You're right. Rabbi Yehuda never meant to say that the shear for carrying out earthenware is enough to make a tripod, because a tripod is significantly larger than the little piece you screw on top of the bellows that you're using for the gold refiner's oven. What he meant to say was." Is that you're just taking the earthenware to plug up any cracks that are in the small oven or in the tripod. So that's significantly less, again, than the shear of the Chacham. So the Gemara, again, is just trying to do some kind of footwork here to make sure that Rabbi Yehuda really has a smaller shear than that of the Chacham. Okay, so skipping the parentheses again, going to the top of Unbeis. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hamotzi Seyar Kedei Lagabobo Esatit, Tit lasos pikor shel tzorfei zav. So when it comes to carrying out hair, so you have to so in order to be chayav for carrying out hair on Shabbos, it's enough hair that you would use to mix with clay. Apparently, they used to mix hair with clay and made the clay a little bit easier to work with. Apparently, and in terms of carrying out clay, so this was in the Mishnah, you're chayav when you carry out enough again to put on the top of that gold the gold refiners of the goldsmith's oven, right? The crucible they used to use to produce gold. Okay, then the Mishnah said sid kedei lasod. When it comes to carrying out lime, right? This was basically used as a way to remove hair that young girls would use to remove hair. So you're chayav when you carry out enough to remove hair from a young girl. And the Gemara says Tana kedei lasod etzba ketana shebebanos. Specifically, you would be chayav when you carry out enough lime that girls would put on their smallest finger to remove. In other words, that amount of lime was typically the smallest amount that they would use to remove hair. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Benos Yisrael shehigiu lefirkan velo higiu leshanim. Let's say you have a girl who basically she's reached physical puberty, right? She's in other words, she's starting to mature and develop hairs, but she's not technically bat mitzvah yet. Let's say she's like 11 years old. So then the Gemara says benos aniim toflo sosan besid, benos ashirim toflo sosan besoles, benos melachim toflo sosan beshemen hamor, shene amar shishacha dashim beshemen hamor. So the Gemara says that all girls from different different financial backgrounds would use different things to remove hair from their body. So the girls who were very poor used to use lime. The girls who were from wealthy families used to use fine flour. And the girls who came from royal families used to use myrrh oil, which we actually know, the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Megillas Esther, right? That when the girls used to go into Ahasuerus's palace and they were treated by Haggai and Shashgaz, who were like the guys who were in charge of getting the girls all ready to go to Achashverosh, so they used to use this Shemen Hamor. They used to be anointed with this myrrh oil. So the Gemara says, my Shemen Hamor, what exactly is this Shemen Hamor? So Rav Huna Bar Chiya Amar Stach, it's a certain kind of an oil. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar Shemen Zayis Shalohi V'yishwish. It's olive oil that comes from olives that are not yet one-third ripe. Tanya, Reb Yehuda Omer, An Pekino and Shemen Zayas Shalohi Via Shwish. And the Gemara references a Braisa in Meseches Menachos that discusses using this type of oil in a carbon mincha. Because we know, of course, that carbon minchas require oil. So the Gemara discusses whether one can use what's called An Pekino, which An Pekino is just another word for olive oil coming from olives that are not yet one third ripe. So the Gemara says, Velama Sachino. So why do the girls use this kind of oil? The Gemara says, Shemeshir Esaseru Ma'adin Habasar. Because it used to remove hairs, which is relevant to our Gemara, and it used to make their skin glow. So again, it was considered to be a very high quality type of an oil that they used to use. And the Gemara now has a very, very odd story based on this. The Gemara says, Rav Bivi Havyale Brata. Rav Bivi had a daughter, Tufla Aver. So Rav Bivi used to take this oil and put it on his daughter. So Shaka Badalud Meos Zuze. Because after he put on this myrrh oil, whatever this was, on his daughter, his daughter had this like kind of glow about her. She looked, she looked exceptionally beautiful. That people, that men were, these suitors were willing to pay up to 400 zuz to marry her. And she was considered to be exceptionally beautiful after he put on this myrrh oil. So the Gemara says, Hava Hahu Nachri B'Shivavuse, there was a non-Jew who lived in his community, Havyale Brata, who also had a daughter, and he tried the same thing. So Tafla B'chad Zimna V'Mesa. But the problem was that when he put the myrrh oil on his daughter died. So Amar, he said, Kata Rav Bivi Labrati, Rav Bivi killed my daughter, because he was basically blaming that, he was copying what he did, and his daughter died. So Amar Rav Nachman Rav said, no, Rav Bivi Deshase Shechra Boya Benase Tafla. Anan Delosha Sinan Shechra Lo Boya Benase Tafla. He says, you know why Rav Bivi's daughter could handle all that? Because he drank a lot of beer. And again, when you drink beer, as people say, it basically puts hair on your chest. In this case, almost literally, right? In other words, it puts a lot of hair on you. So because Rav Bivi drank a lot of beer, so therefore for his daughters, it was okay and it was good to put this stuff on. But people who don't drink a lot of beer, it's actually dangerous. And as you see, this non-Jew's daughter actually died as a result. Okay. Fine. So then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kedei Lasod Kilkul. Of course, so then we cited a machlokas in the Mishnah about using the lime to remove hair from hair from around the temple, from around the head. So the Gemara wants to know, my kilkul, my andifig. These are the different terms the Mishnah used about removing hair from different parts of the head. So Amar Rav, tzida uvas tzida. This refers again to the hair by the temple and the hair right below the temple. That's what the Mishnah is referring to in terms of the amount of lime that one can carry out. So the Gemara asks again the same question that we just asked on the bottom of the previous amud. Lememra de shiura de Rabbi Yehuda nafish, akamalan de shiura de Rabbana nafish. So again, the Mishnah presents three different opinions here about how much lime a person has to carry out to be on Shabbos to be chayiv. According to the Chachamim, it's enough for the girl to put on her small finger. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's enough to put by the temple. And according to Rabbi Nechemi, it's enough to put under the temple. So the Gemara seems to assume that Rabbi Yehuda actually seems to have a larger shear than the Chachamim, which is a problem. So the Gemara says, no, zuta mi derabbanan v'nafish mi derabbi Nechemi. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is somewhere in the middle. His shear is smaller than that of the Chachamim, but his shear is larger than that of Rabbi Nechemi. Okay. The Gemara then says, Meisvei, Amar Rabbi, Nirin divri Rabbi Yehuda b'chavut, v'divri Rabbi Nechemi b'veitzas hasid. So says Rabbi, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda's position, namely that the shear for which you're chayav for carrying a lime is enough to put by the temple. That's if the lime is dissolved, if it's like liquidy. And he says, but whereas I side with Rabbi Nechemia that the shear is by putting it on the bottom of the temple, if it's beitzas hasid, which are basically like solid blocks of lime. So the Gemara explains, v'isal kadaitach tzida uvas tzida idi v'idi chavut. But if you're going to tell me that the Mishnah, when the Mishnah uses those terms, kilkul and andife, those are the terms that we use in the Mishnah, if that's a reference to the hair by the temple and right beneath the temple, then either way you should be using dissolved lime, because you can't take a brick of lime, stick it on your hair, and just have the hair come out. It's not going to do anything. You Dafta. In other words, the lime has to be dissolved. It has to be more of like a lotion type of a consistency to actually do anything. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ella Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Amri Devei Rabbi Ami Andifa. The Gemara says we have to amend the Mishnah. In other words, we thought that the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nechemya was about these very subtle nuances about which part of the head are you removing the hair from. But according to this new version of the Gemara, Rabbi Nechemya was not talking about hair removal at all. In fact, he says that the word andifa is incorrect. It should really be andifa. What's an andifa? An andifa means a new kli, a new vessel. So what exactly does that mean? It means that they would use to take these blocks of lime and they used to rub them around inside of the vessel to give it a certain sheen, to give it a certain color. So the Gemara says, really, maskeflor of kahana, v'chiyadam osa ma'osav anparos? Is a person going to throw their money down the drain, basically? In other words, the Gemara is saying, if I take a solid block of lime and I rub it inside of, let's say, my drinking cup, my cup of wine, so first of all, the wine is going to get ruined because of the lime, and the lime is going to get ruined because I'm rubbing it against this kli. So why would a person ever do such a thing? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ella amar of kahana, shinasos kidisnan, shnasos hayubihin, ad kan lapar, ad kan la'ayil, ad kan la'kevis. So the first answer of the Gemara is that it's not that they would rub the lime on the inside of the kli, but rather what the Mishnah means is that they used to make these markers, these indications on the outside of the kli, just as we find, for example, in the Beis HaMikdash. We know that various karbanos, depending on the type of animal you were offering, you would have to bring different amounts of oil or different amounts of libations of wine that would accompany different karbanos. We actually read about it in theory, if anyone was in shul yesterday, for the Kriyas HaTorah of Rosh Chodesh, right, when the Pesukim talk about, you have to bring a Revi'a Sahin or a Shlisha Sahin, right? In other words, you have to bring a third of a hand, a half a hand, a quarter of a hand. It varies depending on the type of animal you're bringing. So in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have these marks.
Found an open shul yesterday?
No, I did not find an open shul yesterday, but if anyone did the Kriyas HaTorah themselves, or if anyone whatever, if you looked at the Kriyas HaTorah and Parshas Pinchas, then you would know it. Again, the Kalim and the Beis HaMikdash had these markings, so it would say up to here for a bull, up to here for a ram, up to here for a lamb, whatever it was, right? So the Gemara says that's what it means, that they used to have these markings on the kli. That's one answer. V'iba yisema my andifa afusa. The Gemara says that an alternative shot is that really the word andifa does have to do with the head, just not with the hairs, but rather with the forehead. In other words, the girls used to put this lime on their forehead to give it a sheen. How do we know that the word andifa means a forehead? There was this guy from the Galil who went to Bavel, to Amrule, where they said to him, "Kum drosh lanu b'maisim merkava." They asked this guy. Apparently, he was very well versed in the areas of Kabbalah and things of that nature. He said, they said to him, "I want you to get up and give us a shear on the maisim merkava." The maisim merkava, which actually is going to be the haftorah for the first day of Shavuos coming up this week, right? The maisim merkava is the very beginning of Sefer Yecheskel. These very, very esoteric things about Malachim and the chariots of Hashem and the Kisei Yaakov. These very, very deep esoteric things that most people don't have a very good grasp on. In fact, the Gemara in the second parak of Chagiga says that it's actually usher for a person to publicly lecture about these topics, about things like Ma'aseh Bereishis and Ma'aseh Merkava and things that are way beyond the grasp of normal people. So they asked this guy, can you give us a shir on Ma'aseh Merkava? They were basically asking him to give him some kind of a shir on Kabbalah and topics like that. So Amar Lehu, so he said, Edrush Lehu Kedadarash Rabbi Nechemya Lechavri. He said, yeah, I'll give a shir the way that Rabbi Nechemya gave a shir to his colleagues. So what happened? The Navka Arisa Min Kosal Umachte Ba'andife Vamis. This wasp or a hornet or whatever it was came out of the wall, stung him on the forehead, and he died. And they said, Min Dile Dale, that this guy brought this on himself because he was so arrogant to think that he could, give over these very esoteric topics to other people. He died because of it. Why is the Gemara quoting the story here? Just to prove that the word andifa means a forehead. That's the only reason why the story is even here, because it says the wasp came out of the wall and stung him on the andifa on the forehead, and he died. That's the only reason why the Gemara is even quoting this story. Okay.
Rabbi, yeah. We're about to start another mission that's going to enumerate a number of other items. Correct. The same type of things.
Correct.
And
we're going to do another. Yeah.
I know you told us they're going to be like 10 top name of this.
Yeah.
Are they literally trying to take every item known to them on the planet?
Well, I think it was every realistic item that they had access to, they would use. Yeah, I'm saying like a lot of these items, they're not. I mean, again, I don't know how many of us are carrying around a lot of these things on a daily basis, but like, I think back then, these items were, again, as we've already seen, as we'll continue to see, these items were used for very practical purposes, right? So like, they used these things for whatever it was that they needed to use them for. So for them, this was a very realistic discussion. By tomorrow, not by tomorrow, by Wednesday, we're going to hopefully be done with this topic. So, but we're almost there, but it is very, very technical.
It looks like they will try to take every known item. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's probably right. Okay,
Rabbi,
yeah.
Rabbi,
Yeah.
Just one other question. How come most of this stuff for the last couple of Dapim is only being brought down in the Rambam? None of this is really being brought down in the Torah or in the Shulchan Aruch, nothing like that. Most of it's only being brought down for Halakha in the Rambam.
I actually didn't even notice that. I see some of this stuff brought down in the Torah. I
would say 90% of this stuff is only being brought down in the Rambam.
Listen, it could very well be that some of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, again, I didn't look inside, so I don't want to like specifically comment because I didn't see how they formulate it. It could just be that they're like, yeah, there's an Isser called carrying on Shabbos, and every item has its particular shear. It's also very possible, by the way, that a lot of these things, you know, are going to change, you know, with society, because like as Billy kind of alluded to, right, these things were used by different societies, but maybe we would use these items differently today. Like, for example, as we'll see tomorrow, right, the Mishnah tomorrow is going to talk about carrying out a bone to make it into a spoon. I don't know how many people today make bones into spoons. So I'm saying, like, you know, these kinds of things maybe can change over time. So maybe that's why it's not being cited there. I'm not sure. I would have to look and actually see how they formulate it before I would be able to comment on it. But that's my inclination to say that. Okay. So the Mishnah continues with the same theme. Okay. So Adama kechosam hamartzufin divrei Rabbi Akiva vachachamim omrim kechosam haigros. How much dirt do you have to carry out on Shabbos to be chayev? So according to Rabbi Akiva, it's enough dirt to seal up these sacks, to seal up these bags. And according to the Chachamim, it's enough dirt to use as a seal on a letter, because again, they used to seal with the clay, with dirt, to make sure that the letter wasn't tampered with. Zevel v'chol hadak k'dei l'zavel kelach shel kruv divrei Rabbi Akiva v'chachamim omrim k'dei l'zavel kresha. This was actually cited on yesterday's daf, but this machlokas in the Mishnah, when it comes to carrying out manure or very like fine sand that was used, you know, as you know, basically as a form of manure to help things grow in the field. So it's a very technical machlokas. According to Rabbi Akiva, you have to carry out enough to plant cabbages, and according to the Chacham, it has to be enough to plant leeks, which apparently is a smaller shear. Then the Mishnah says chol hagas kedelitin al malo kafsid. When it comes to carrying out thicker sand, then you're chayav when you put on enough of that sand on like the top of a spoon that was used by plasterers. We'll see in the Gemara in a second what that means. Then the Mishnah says kane kedelasos kumus. So when it comes to carrying out reeds, you're chayav if the reed is enough to make it into a quill. V'mhaya ove omerusas kedelavasho bo beitz. If the reed is either too thick to make into a quill, or the reed is fragmented, it's broken, so you can't make it into a quill, then all you can really do with that reed is use it as a form of like a fuel for a fire to cook an egg. And the Gemara in the Mishnah says it's a shear for cooking a very quick egg, an egg that cooks very quickly that's beaten with oil. And again, we'll see in the Gemara what that means in a second. So the Gemara says, Amalokav said, Tana kdelitin al pikav shel sayadin. When the Mishnah said that you're chayav when you carry out enough to put, you know, in other words, enough thick sand to put onto the spoon of the plasterer, that meant on his trowel, like the thing that the guys use when they apply like the paint or the cement or whatever to the walls. So when you put enough of the thick sand on that, that's the shear for which you're going to be chayev. So the Gemara says, "Man Tana dechol mali lelisid." Who is the Tana that says that sand is good for cement? That sand is actually it's beneficial. It helps the cement. So Amar of Chista, Rabbi Huda. He must be Rabbi Huda. Desanya lo yosin adam es beso besid el imkain irev bo teven ocho. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tevin Mutter Chol Aser Mipnei Shehu Trachsid. The Gemara is alluding to a machlokas that appears in Maseches Baba Basra, a very, very important machlokas at the end of the third parak of Baba Basra, regarding what's called Zecher L'Churban. We know that we do many things today as a way to commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, probably most famously putting the ashes on the head of a chasan, breaking a glass at a wedding, leaving a part of your house unpainted, right? These are all things that people are supposed to do. There are other things the Gemara mentions, some of which we do, some of which we don't, but specifically regarding leaving part of your house unpainted or unfinished, so that's one thing that we do Zecher L'Churban. So the Gemara has a very, very technical machlokas here about when it comes to plastering your house, putting this plaster over your house. So the question is, am I allowed to put that plaster on every square inch of my house? So according to the Tana Kama, he says the only way that I'm allowed to plaster every last square inch of my house is if I mix into the plaster some straw or some sand, because the assumption is that the straw and sand is going to detract from the quality of the plaster, and it's going to basically make the plaster a little bit off-white, it's going to be a little bit off-color, and that's going to be a sign that this is Zecher L'Churban, and that part of my house is going to stand out as being Zecher L'Churban. However, Rabbi Huda disagrees partially. He says, if I mix in straw with the plaster, that's good, that's fine, that's going to make it a little bit off-white, but if I mix in the sand, then Rabbi Huda says, that's still going to be a problem. Why? Because apparently Rabbi Huda held that mixing sand with the plaster gives it a little bit of a sheen, gives it a little bit of a color. color. So the Gemara says, you see from here that Rebbe Yehuda appears to be the one who holds that mixing in the plaster together with the sand is actually beneficial. That's what the Gemara seems to assume. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. The Gemara says, Rava Amar Afilu Tamer Rabbanan Kilkulo Zehu Tikuno. Rava comes along and says, you could even argue that the author of this statement could be the Rabbanan as well. Why? Because the Rabbanan will tell you that in this particular case, even though, yes, physically, when I mix in sand into plaster, the Rabbanan say, yes, it's detracting from the quality of the plaster, but in this particular case, that's what I want, right? I'm trying to fulfill the halacha of Zecher L'Chorban. So I want the piece of my house to look a little bit off color. So one could argue that the Rabbanan say, yeah, if this is what you want, so that's almost like a tikkun. The fact that I'm ruining it, the fact that I'm making it even worse, is actually beneficial for me because it allows me to fulfill the halacha of Zecher L'Chorban. Okay. So then the Mishnah said, Kanek de lasos kulmos, when it comes to carrying out a reed, it's enough to make it into a quill. So Tana, kulmos hamagia l'kishrei etzba'osav. It has to be enough of, the reed has to be large enough to be a quill that would reach your knuckles. So by Ravashi, kesher elyon, kesher atachton, tiku. And Ravashi leaves as an unresolved suffix. Does that mean like your upper knuckles, your middle knuckles, right? Again, he leaves that question unresolved. Basically, how large does the reed have to be? Okay. Then we said v'im haya aved. We said if the reed was either too thick or if it was broken, then it's going to be enough to use to cook this egg. So the Gemara says, Tana, trufa b'shemen unasuna be'ofas. It's enough to basically take an egg, which is easily cooked, that's beaten together with oil, and put into a frying pan. So Amar Leimar, Berei de Ravina Liberei, Mishmielecha Beitza Kalamahi, did you hear from anyone, what is the definition of this easily cooked egg? So Amar Leimar said, oh, it must be Be'asa de Tziltzla. It must be the egg of a turtle dove. So he said, Mai Taima, why do you assume that it's dafka, the egg of a turtle dove? So the Gemara says, Mishum de Zutra, because turtle dove eggs are very small. So okay, Ema de Tziparta, so why not just say it's a regular bird, which also have very small eggs, or the bird of a sparrow. The egg of a sparrow. So the Gemara says, Ishtik. So yeah, he was silent. He didn't know how to respond to that. So Amar Lehi, he said, Midi Shmielecha Baha. Do you hear anything about this question about what type of an egg the Mishnah was referring to? So Amar Lehi, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshes, Beitzas Tarnagoles. It must be referring to a chicken's egg. Umay Karu La Beitza Kala. Why does the Mishnah referred to a chicken's egg as a beitza kaza, light egg? Must be because shiaru chachamim in lecha beitza kala levashel yoser mi beitzas tarnagoles, because chicken's eggs are the quickest, the most easily cooked types of eggs that exist. So the Gemara asks, umayishna kol shiuri shabbos kegrogeres ohacha kebeitza? Why are all the other shiurim in Hilchos Shabbos of carrying always the size of a fig, but all of a sudden this one is the size of an egg? So Amar Leisa, no, hachi Amar Rav Nachman kegrogeres mi beitza kala. In other words, he says we misunderstood the Mishnah. Means that you're chaya when you carry out a fig's worth of this egg, a fig's worth of an easily cooked egg, which in this case is a chicken's egg, then you're going to be chayav on Shabbos.